Blog Talk Radio.
This land is mine. God gave this land to me. This brave and ancient land to me. And when the morning sun reveals the hills and plains, then I see a land where children can run free. So take my hand, walk this land with me, and walk this lovely land with me. When you are by my side, with the help of God, I know I can be strong.
Well, good evening, and happen to happy Shabbat, and welcome to Yada Yah Radio. I'm here with both Kirk and JB, and fellas, not so much you, JB, but Kirk and I guess are in the doghouse with some of Covenant members, because we have been reporting that Yahweh explicitly refers to Dod as his anointed, his Mashiach, and that at least I have never seen a place where Yahweh refers to Yosha as his Mashiach. And in reporting that, there's some folks that are not very pleased with us. Is that just a reasonable summation of the email chain?
Mutual friend. I didn't choose to read what they were saying in detail or anything, because it wasn't worth it to me. But so I reviewed it and said, well, you know, I
think. All right. Well, let me give you just a couple quick thoughts on this.
Okay.
The most important thought is that there are a lot of titles that are important to Yahweh. A lot of them. Elohim is his title. That's an important one. There's no more important title to Yahweh than is Father Ab. He uses Ruach Kodesh as a declarative title, set apart spirit. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of titles that are really important to Yahweh. You know, the title of his instructions is Torah. So there are titles that are important. And there are also metaphors that are words that are become depictions of things that are important to God that are laid through his testimony. For example, the branch. And the person called the branch the most often happens to be Dod. And there are references which apply both to Dod and Yosha. And sure, there's some that may apply only to Yosha, but they're shared. So, Mashiach, I don't think is ever used as a title anywhere. It's certainly not used as a title in reference to Yosha. You know, the two times that it comes up in the same prophetic passage, which is in Daniel, both times it's a adjective. So it modifies a particular type of messenger in the two times that it comes up in Daniel. So my first point is, Mashiach is not among the important titles. It is a reasonably important act relative to particularly establishing what Yahweh would prefer, which is a shepherd king. You know, you made that point There are kings who were shepherds, and then there's a shepherd king. Dode was the ultimate shepherd king. It was Jackie that sent me this, just some of her research. We were having this discussion. She said, the origin of anointing was actually from a practice of shepherds. Mm-hmm. Lice and other insects would often get into the wool of sheep, and when they got near the sheep's head, they would burrow into the sheep's ears, and it would ultimately kill them. So ancient shepherds poured oil on the sheep's head. This made the wool slippery, making it difficult for the insects to get inside the sheep's ears, because the insects would simply slide off. From this, anointing became symbolic of blessing, protection, and empowerment. A person was anointed with oil to signify God's blessing or call on that person's life. A person was anointed for a special purpose, to be king, to be a prophet, to be a builder. Now, Dode, for example, was chosen to be king and to be a prophet. Yahweh was blessing them, protecting them, empowering them with the term Mashiach, or Mashiach, if you will, the anointed. His Ma'ashe, doing his work, the work of Yah. So it is a interesting concept. And the second point I wanted to make is that, I don't know, almost 20 years ago now, I began this as a total blundering idiot. I was so steeped in Christianity, and although I had left it because I knew it was wrong, that it just was a lie on so many different levels, and I became an agnostic. When I began the translating, I didn't know enough to get out of my own way. And I was constantly having to learn and relearn new things, you know, dispose of old ideas and learn new ideas. And I carried, the concept of Masayah, because I knew that Masayah couldn't be a title, and I saw Masayah used 22 times as a name, and you know, it was based upon the work, Masay, of Yah. That made sense. So, you know, I tried to come up with a way of salvaging what seemed to be an important concept, even though there was no justification, no direct justification for doing so.
Mm-hmm.
And the more I wrote, the more I realized, boy, I'm really forcing that, because Yahweh, while there are, is some, or are some, 22 references to Amasiyah, they're not directed at Yosha either. And so the prophetic references are much more likely to use branch, for example. You know, the idea that Dode and Yosha are branches off the same tree. You know, serving slightly different purposes.
Mm-hmm.
And the point I wanted to make is that all along the way, what we've been committed to doing is going where the words lead. You know, if I learned there was no such thing as a renewed covenant, I got to get rid of the idea. Yeah, just drop it and embrace what's true. And so I know that there's this great desire in those who are coming out of Christianity and to know that it is a corruption of the truth, a counterfeit. To go to the Hebrew terms and try to use them to correct Christianity, so it becomes Hamasayach or the Masayah Yosha. And I think it's really an attempt to correct the religion.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm telling you that I just think that's a really bad idea. I've been there. I just think it's a really bad idea. I don't think there's, not only don't I think there's any merit in trying to correct Christianity, I think it's counterproductive. So there really is no justification for, at least I can see, for using Mashiach is a title for Yahusha, and most certainly no justification for changing, translating that to Christos, Christou, Christone, and then transliterating that Christ and coming up with a Jesus Christ or a religion called Christian. And I think that perhaps this inappropriate fascination with Yahusha somehow being Mashiach of Yahweh is what has led to the name of the religion, the last name of the god of the religion, and maybe has been most divisive in driving the children of Israel away from the Christian Bible. Because they just know that none of that can be true.
Yeah.
So, I'm not claiming I'm right, Kirk. I'm not sure you're not claiming that you're right, but this is certainly where the words seem to lead, and I don't think I've ever been more comfortable just going where the words lead, because that seems to make perfect sense to me. One of the things that was just really amazing, Kirk, is this passage we're going to begin with, which is the passage where we jumped off last week. It makes this differentiation between Dod and Shaul.
Yes.
So he says, I'm rejecting Shaul. I removed him from your midst. Well, it's prophesying, removing the other, the really damning Shaul, because this Shaul, King Shaul, he was a mosquito bite.
Yeah.
The other was the plague of malaria, tenfold.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think Paul is a lot of the reason we have the Christian religion, obviously, but the focus on the Greek text in Yahusha in specific. Yeah, I would almost be willing to bet that Matthew, Mark, and Luke, John, were all written as counters to Paul. This religion of Paul was spreading, and so they were trying to set the record straight. And that's really, I think, probably the only reason those ever got written down as they are. Before that,
I'm not sure that all of them, but I would absolutely agree that Matanyah is the antidote. You know, if you needed it, Matanyah was written in Hebrew, but all they have is a Greek copy of it. But Matanyah is the absolute antidote for Pauline Christianity. There's no question about it.
Oh yeah.
Well, so is the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms. But there is total incompatibility between Matanyah and Paul's letters.
Mm-hmm.
And to a large degree, there's incompatibility with Matanyah and Yahochanan's testimony as well. It's just that Yahochanan's testimony focuses on what happened post Pesach month in Makotam, although the beginning of it is profoundly important with that discussion he had with Nicodemus.
Yes.
Yeah, but and what's interesting too is that while Luke is a Roman, so as a Roman, he's not revealing Yahweh's testimony. Yahweh only used Yehudim, but he is, while he's putting together this stuff, he's Paul's attaché. That's why there are three accounts, two from eyewitnesses, one not, about Yahusha's statement on Pesach, on whether or not it was the sign of the covenant or the sign of the new covenant, and the new covenant is only found in Luke, Paul's attaché.
Yeah.
But there's a... This is a plague of monumental proportions that was promoted by Shaul, and Shaul was the person who brought us most profoundly Jesus Christ. That's funny, of course. He promotes a Jesus Christ, but never quotes him.
Promote of him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure. That's so amazing. He's the promoter of a Jesus Christ, and he never once quotes him. At least not accurately.
Except for words that he puts in his mouth, which were from Dionysus.
Well, you can't. You're not quoting him when...
you're not quoting him.
When you put Dionysus' quote in his mouth, that's not quoting him. Yeah, the only place that he made, even made an attempt was the Passover Declaration, where he desperately wanted his Jesus to speak of a new covenant, and of course he butchered the whole thing, and his presentation was the antithesis of what was actually meant and conveyed. So listen, if it's important to you that you embrace and hold on to the idea that Yosha was Hamathiach, that's fine. I don't have a problem with it. If you've got a issue with Dode also being Hamathiach, I'm sorry for you. Because he clearly is.
Mm-hmm. The text disagrees with you.
That's what the text says. So, I'm going with that because that's the text is clearly inspired by Yahweh, and so he clearly was. Now, to what degree you want to ascribe this notion to Yosha, I'm very comfortable with the definition prepared to serve. Called to serve, obviously being applied to Yosha. I just don't see the word itself being used as a title in reference to him. And if there is a place, then please bring it to our attention.
I'm happy to be wrong.
Yeah, happy to be wrong. Yeah, absolutely delighted to be wrong. To be shown that I'm wrong because it gives you a chance to
be right.
Yeah, right. Therefore,
I hate being wrong, so if I'm wrong, please prove it to me.
Absolutely. We're in agreement. Therefore, my steadfast love and enduring mercy will not be removed from him, nor be diminished. Now, the person he's been talking to here in this is Samuel 7:15. You know, the conversation is about Dode. Now, the conversation about Dode is also, in many ways, I think, a prophecy of Yosha. But there are aspects of it that only apply to Dode, while there's some that apply to both. I think that's fair to say. Therefore, my steadfast love and enduring mercy. You know, what's interesting is that that Yahweh's enduring mercy, his chesed, his unfailing relationship, only applies to Dode.
Yes, he didn't show any mercy on Yosha.
Oh, absolutely not. And the relationship did fail with Yosha. That was the whole concept of him fulfilling matzah. It was deliberately separate.
You separated yourself from me.
Absolutely. Yeah, why have you separated yourself from me? So, therefore, my steadfast love and enduring mercy applies only to Dode. I mean, the whole point of Yosha fulfilling Pesach and Matzah and making a statement that's recorded in the 22nd Psalm about, my God, why have you forsaken me, left me, is an absolute confirmation that this part of it doesn't apply to Yosha. And therefore, we should naturally conclude that the rest of the sentence applies to Dode. And will not be removed from him, nor diminished. Well, of course, it was removed from Yosha.
Mm-hmm.
I turned away and completely rejected Shaul. I forsook and totally removed him from your presence.
Only Dode.
Now, Shaul was important to Dode. Shaul was a footnote in the history of Yisrael. Now, he is important in the history of Yisrael, I think, only for one reason. And I think if it wasn't for this reason, we would know nothing about the man. I think Shaul, King Shaul, was important because he was the harbinger. He was the prototype. He was the prophetic embodiment of the Shaul that would poison and corrupt 5 to 10 billion souls.
Mm-hmm. Well, he served
and
as a example for what Yahweh said all men would do when they let other men rule over them.
That is correct. That is the other purpose
exactly
of Shaul.
Said.
Right. And what's interesting is that both of those purposes are underscored by the fact that Pauline Christianity, Paul's letters, are an absolute contradiction of everything Dode said. Dode is the living embodiment and example that Paul was wrong. You know, Paul's basis was that the Torah was a set of laws that condemned, that if you failed on one of them, you were condemned of all of them, and that the Torah couldn't save.
And
God damn it.
Yeah, give me a break.
Dode is the living embodiment that's not true. And so, since King Shaul was the enemy of Dode, it forecasts the wannabe apostle, the fake prophet, Shaul, Paul, as then the enemy.
Yeah.
Of Dode.
Well,
and the testimony of Dode.
I thought it was interesting that if you really think for just a minute, is the people's choice is always Shaul, and by and large.
Yeah.
And
yes, that's also prophetic.
Dode. I mean, to this day, we're sitting here talking about what Dode wrote. I mean.
Yes, right. And what is, speaking of writing, what was Paul's most acclaimed letter? A letter that actually establishes the religion of Christianity?
Romans?
Absolutely.
Galatians.
And in the 13th chapter of Romans, right in the heart of it, what does Paul say about the Roman government?
Well, he wants you to
bow down to it. Ordained by God.
Yeah, put in place by God, and you need to submit to it.
No.
You need to obey it.
Of course,
Yahweh's testimony regarding King Shaul was the antithesis of that. By choosing to obey that government, you're choosing to reject him. Yeah,
well,
I mean, it's so much here that is profound. This is one of the most profound. The Christian, when I was a Christian, I was once to go to 2 Samuel 7, 10, 11 through, not quite to this point, because, boy, that was, from the seed of Dode, man, that's the line for that Yosha's going to come to, and that he's going to suffer for our sins, and it's all laid out there. What a wonderful prophecy. I missed all this. The Shaul was cast off. The Yahweh rid himself and the world of Shaul, just as he's going to do. Completely rejected Shaul. Now, Yahweh rejecting this man that was just a footnote, I mean, he has no value other than for Yahweh to say that by accepting a political entity, you're rejecting him. That's important.
Mm-hmm.
By forecasting the maniacal nature of human government, well, that was important. But it didn't matter who it was that Yahweh was talking about, so Shaul just happened to be the guy that he used in this matter because his name coincided with the man that was going to become the plague of death. And it was important to have an adversary for Dode's testimony, for Dode's relationship with Yahweh, because religion would be based on disagreeing with, contradicting Dode's testimony. Judaism, Islam, and Christianity. I think those are the only reasons that we know about this man.
Yeah. It's a great thing.
But it's really clear that this is what God is talking about here. So in the prophecy that Christians are want to believe talks about their Jesus Christ And I've got no issue with, there's some overlays here that apply both to Dode and to Yehosha. But this is extraordinarily condemning of Christianity when he says, I forsook and totally removed, I completely rejected Shaul. And so your family and your position of authority is totally trustworthy and dependable. Firmly established, credible, and enduring, Amon. Forever and ever. As a continuing witness concerning your approach and your presence, your throne and position where the empowered are entitled to sit shall be established forever as a witness. Well, let's talk about this for a moment.
Yeah.
First of all, did Yosha have a family?
Yes.
Yosha had a family? I didn't know. He was married.
Oh, kids? No, I thought you were Dode. Yeah.
Father, brothers.
No, Steve.
No children.
Okay. Your family. Yeah, that's true that Yosha had
no
wife, brothers.
No children.
But no wife, no children. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not talking about your father's and mother's family, your family. No, Dode had a family. Those descendants. The Ephata. And your position of authority. Now, clearly, Yosha had tremendous authority. So both would qualify. It's totally trustworthy and dependable, firmly established, credible, and enduring. You know, Dode's position of authority is beautifully established. It's trustworthy, it's dependable, it's firmly established, credible, and enduring. The difficulty with Yosha's position of authority is that he really didn't claim much authority. He was there to fulfill Pesach, Bonson, and Bakurim. And he didn't try to establish trustworthy testimony. We don't have a record of what he said in Hebrew. We don't even have trustworthy records translated into Greek. Right. Yeah, never once did he say, hey, write this down. And was Yahweh's style, was his testimony verbal or written?
Written.
Yes.
Right from the beginning, right?
Everywhere.
Moshe, you sit down and write.
We don't have an oral tradition. Yahweh never once says, I told you this orally and I taught you how to remember it. I need you to remember everything I've told you orally. Never once. Never once. And so, the testimony that is written down, and therefore totally trustworthy and dependable, firmly established, because Yosha's testimony is not firmly established.
It's hearsay.
It's Dode's.
Mm-hmm.
Forever and ever, as an enduring witness, ad olam. Olam is forever. Odd is enduring witness. When the two are put together, you have a eternal and enduring witness. That's what ad olam means.
We're 14 years away from the end, and we're still talking about his.
Oh, yes, that's correct. Correct. And I know now that it's becoming a broken record for a lot of people that they'd be like fingernails scratching on the blackboard, and I don't mean it to be. But I don't know how you miss or why it isn't seen as a celebration that Dode's words are being observed now. We're drawing attention to them. I think it's Dode's testimony that's going to bring the children of Yisrael home. And they're going to come home to the kingdom of Dode.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's Dode's testimony. It's not mine. It's not yours, Kirk. It's not yours, JB. It's Dode's.
and understanding the road.
That's what drives them away.
Right. So rather than Yosha being a wedge that drives them away, and they, because of the Christian muck of Jesus Christ, because of, you know, presenting a God who is born and dies, a God who celebrates Easter and Christmas, because of all of that rubbish and the Babylonian crud that has been smeared all over Yosha, and the fact that he, you know, he emerges right out of the pages of the Dionysus' mythology. He is what, more than probably anything, has driven Jews away from Yahweh.
They should have the same reaction that Chabahuk had. What is this?
What in the world is this? You can hear him shaking his head as he tries to deal with the muck that is Pauline Christianity. And so, well, Doe did not have a star. You know, it is, Jerusalem is the city of David. Dode is the author of the Mizmor and the Mishpat, the Proverbs of the Psalms. And he is the subject of so much of what's written in Samuel. We know so much of what he had to say. His words are so inspiring. They are enduring, and they should not be controversial. Yahweh is not only so clear, it's saying, this guy is correct. He's also the most powerful, the most enduring, the most telling, the most important of the prophets.
Yeah, the way home.
You know, it's interesting, too, is that without Dode, we know very little about Yosha.
Yes, because of 22 and 88.
I mean, the only guy that's an eyewitness to what happened on Pesach, Matzah, and Makotam is Dode, the 22nd to 88th Mizmor. He's the one that's explaining what's happening. And that's really all Yahweh wanted. Yahweh specifically used Yosha, placed his soul and then later his spirit on Yosha so that he could fulfill his promises in the covenant by fulfilling Pesach, Matzah, Bukurim, and Shavuah in conjunction with the set-apart spirit. And to explain that so that we would understand it, he gave Dode a prophetic ringside seat to what was occurring. Now, we also know that Yosha did not have a throne. So did. Your throne and position were empowered and are entitled. We're entitled to be established forever as a witness. This is important, I think, in that it describes Yah's nature. And I think this distinction, I'm going to go out on a limb here, I think, and this might help. I think that if you were to boil it all down to one thing, only a diminished manifestation of Yahweh could fulfill Pesach, Matzah, and Makotam, and Shavuah. And that's just the reality of it. But that, and so God had to do that through a diminished aspect of himself. But other than that, God's primary preference, his style, his way of operating, his purpose, is always shown and fulfilled by working with flawed individuals. Mm-hmm. Adam, Noach, Abraham, Moshe.
Okay, yeah.
Dode. He always works through flawed individuals. That is the entire purpose of creation. And so, when he's going to tell his story, when he's going to explain how to engage and how to observe his teaching and his guidance, he's going to do it through a flawed individual. When he's going to reveal his teaching, he's going to do it through a flawed individual. That'd be Moshe. When he's going to tell you how to walk away from humankind and to benefit, he's going to do it through Noah, a flawed individual. When it comes to being part of the covenant, he's going to explain that through a really flawed individual, Abraham. That's just God's way of operating. He's happiest when he's working through us and communicating through us than he is doing it on his own. That's why he didn't toot his own horn. That's why we don't have a prophet Yosha with a book named in his honor in Hebrew that he had written down for us. Now, you think if he wanted to know, if he wanted us to know what he said, don't you think he would have written it down? I think he was probably literate. Yeah, he read from the book of...
Yeah, scrolls, absolutely.
Yeah, he cited from the scrolls constantly. He was literate. Don't you think that if he wanted us to know what he said, he'd have written it down? I bet his penmanship was really good.
Mm-hmm.
Why didn't he do so?
Wasn't his purpose.
Yeah, not one word.
Not one word.
Letter sent.
Nada.
He didn't begin the Sermon on the Mount by saying, "Hey, write this down. This is going to be important."
Oh yeah, I've written this down for you. It's on this tablet. We're going to set it up down here. I've written right down here on this big rock. But let me share it with you verbally. Oop. And so your family and your position of authority is totally trustworthy, dependable, established, credible, and enduring forever and ever as a continuing witness concerning your approach and presence. Your throne and your position were empowered and are entitled to sit, and where you are entitled to sit shall be established forever as a witness. You know, I think that's the reason why Yahweh says that he's going to reestablish the kingdom of Dod. And why the kingdom of Dod will be eternal, not just for the seventh millennia. Because it's just what God chose. And this is his favorite guy. And so he's going to continue to empower men and women. And he's going to continue to communicate through men and women. That's a good thing.
You ain't kidding.
Yeah, it's a good thing. So second only to the Torah itself, those Mizmor, his Psalms, and his Mashal, Proverbs, are Yah's greatest gifts to humankind. Everything we need to know about the Torah, its God and covenant, are explained within them. The 19th Psalm is declarative, boldly presenting the Torah's purpose. The 23rd famously depicts Yahweh as our shepherd. The 119th Psalm was explicitly compiled to explain the Torah and reveal how we should observe it. You know, going through each of the 22 letters in the Hebrew alphabet, one at a time, explaining their purpose as it relates to the Torah, and really became the basis of Yosha's not a single yod or tittle, the strokes of the Hebrew letters, shall be dismissed so long as the heavens and earth exist. The one place where the yods and tittles are all presented and none is dismissed, 119th Psalm. The 91st Psalm is Yah's promise to those who expound upon it. That is, that's the one that brought me to this place. Psalms 22 and 88 provide the most accurate and complete eyewitness account of Yahusha's fulfillment of Pesach, of unyeasted bread, and of firstborn children. And and we should never forget how effectively Pauline Christianity was exposed and condemned in Proverbs 6 and 7. And then, of course, consider how much we've learned about Yahweh and developing a relationship with him by reading about Dod and Shamuel. The truth is, there never has been, nor will there ever be, a more effective or enduring witness than Dod. And that includes Yahusha. Tens of billions of people have come and gone, and only one can claim to be God's most beloved, Dod. The more we learn about him, the more we learn from him, the more likely it becomes that we will get to sit next to him on his seat of honor.
Wow.
Okay, guys, now I have gone from the frying pan, I guess, into the fire with that statement, but I can't help
it.
It's
pouring water all over the fire.
There's no other conclusion to draw.
Yeah, I think that killed the fire.
I hope so. I hope so. Now, what's interesting is this whole discussion came up because we were trying to capitalize on a reference and to drive and to fulfill an understanding of a simple word. And the simple word is chismok. Means to branch out. And what we're trying to do with this study, and I know it began a long time ago, and sometimes we lose why we went in this particular direction, but it was all to understand this metaphor. Because based upon how much is written about this metaphor branching out, it is really the metaphor we ought to be considering because it applies beautifully and fully to both Dod and Yahusha. They are the two most important branches on the tree of lives. And to branch out of the tree that is Yahweh and his Torah, that is rooted in the land, is an extraordinarily important metaphor. And so this whole study we've been on has been to examine where it is used prophetically and what it should mean to us. Because we're really twigs coming off of that, one of those two branches.
We're offshoots of these branches.
Right. So in Mizmor 132:17, we find another instance of Chismok branching out. It's used once again in association with the Dod David. This time it occurs in a reference to a lamp that Yahweh has anointed. But rather than jump into Dod's song at its conclusion, let's do what we normally do. Let's begin at the beginning and see where it leads. It begins. So this is Psalms 132. Mizmor, lyrics to Psalms. Psalms 132:1. Yahweh. Well, that's a nice way to start something, by the way. He didn't say, the Lord. He most certainly didn't say, Jesus, or Jesus Christ.
Jebus.
Jebus. He knew God's name. He used God's name. If Yahweh, and he did, and it's unequivocal, say that Dod was the doc, right, and that his testimony, his
enduring witness,
enduring witness, was eternally accurate and dependable, then don't you think when Dod uses Yahweh's name, that it's a really good idea that we know it and use it too?
Yeah.
So how
correct me if I'm wrong, but weren't the Psalms written as lyrics to be put to music?
Yes.
So would that not negate the Jewish religious argument that Yahweh's name is not pronounceable?
Yes.
How are they saying this song if his name is not pronounceable?
Well, would you explain to me how it's possible that Yahweh's name is written using three? There's one of them repeated. Three of the 22 letters in the Hebrew alphabet. There are three of the most common letters in the Hebrew alphabet. And that those letters are in thousands upon thousands of words. And every time those letters are found in any other word, they're pronounceable, including the verb that serves as the basis of his name, Hayah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So how is it possible that mysteriously the Hay, the Yod, and the Law become unpronounceable in this one name, what? And they're pronounceable in every other name and word? How can they be pronounceable in Torah or Shalom or Haya or Elohim and Torah and not pronounceable in Yahweh? How do we get Yisrael?
There are a number of words where literally Yod, Hey, Wah appear in that order and make the Yahweh sound. There's,
right.
Yeah, it's one letter short. And that letter always, almost always makes that Ah sound. So how's this hard?
Yeah, when a hey is at the end of a word, it's 99% of the time. And when it's in the midst of a word, it's about 85% of the time. And there's no dispute that Hayah is Hayah. When God introduced the base of his name, Hayah is one of the most common verbs in the entirety of the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms.
It's the being.
To exist. Yeah. It'd be far hard-pressed to find a verb that's used more often than Hayah.
Well, of course,
go ahead.
Sorry. Now, the question I get is not that some priest or some rabbi couldn't change some doctrine and tell you don't do this, but how did the Yehudim and Yisrael, how did they buy it? Why do they buy it, even today?
Yeah. How do we get Yoel, how do we get Yob?
Yeah.
And how do we get these names these letters are not pronounceable?
Yeah, A E I O U and Y. Come on.
Yeah. Okay. There's five vowels in Hebrew, and Yahweh's name has three of the five. This is not difficult. Yeah, well, he began Yahweh. Zakar. Choose to remember. And it was written in the call imperative. The second imperative is a second person expression of volition. Now, I know that the imperative sounds like, well, that is a command. And, it's quite possible that there are places where the imperative is used to convey a command. But the preponderance of the places where the imperative is used, it is a second-person expression of volition. This is a marvelous example. Do you think that Dode was in a position where he would say, yeah, well, I command you to remember when approaching Dode, me?
Hardly.
Hardly. Yeah, Dode loved Yahweh, but he understood their relative positions.
Mm-hmm.
So it is a wonderful example of how the imperative should be rendered a second-person expression of volition. Yahweh, choose to remember of your own initiative. Assert and proclaim the truth regarding and remind us to respond in an appropriate manner, electing never to forget when approaching Dode. All of his responsive answers and declarations, and Ahu, his replies, the questions he answered, even his actions on occasion, which were communicated verbally through the lyrics of his songs. Is about as important a Hebrew verb as there is because of the context that it's used. And in typical Dode fashion, Yah's prophet is explaining the purpose and the meaning of the word that so many are prone to misinterpret to create a religious ritual. Here and elsewhere, the religious are wont to render Anah as affliction. But that's just unbelievably lame. How is it that Dode would want Yahweh to recall his most painful and degrading experiences? That's the last thing we would want, and certainly not something God would find pleasure in doing.
Yeah.
How is it that the religious have managed to beguile the faithful into believing that God wants us to afflict, which is to debase and injure our souls, on the Day of Reconciliations? I mean, come on, folks. It's, you know, for Rabbinic Judaism, that notion is as stupid as the notion of a dying God on Easter, who's bodily resurrected. I mean, it's just stupid. And here, Dode has the antidote to stupidity. You know, the key thing here is that Yahweh has laid out a plan. The thing that determines whether or not we are part of his family or not is our response, are or not. And so what Dode is saying, God, please, you know, it's, I want you to remember my response. I RSVP'd. I came to the parties. I accepted the terms and conditions. I acted on it. I'm asking you, I want you, God, I don't know if I say it's in the second person volition. God, I want you. I want for you to choose, for it to be your desire to remember my answers, my response. Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that spectacular? What that says is that is this understanding that we have, we've come to have, of the seven steps that lead to Yahweh, of us embracing and accepting and attending, understanding and acting upon, capitalizing upon, on Passover, on the yeasted bread, and firstborn children, and the promise of seven, and then to engage and troubadouring his message on Teruah, and then to do everything we can to encourage reconciliation so that we can all sukkah camp out together, that our response is what matters. It's really all that matters.
Mm-hmm.
It was what mattered to Dode because he said, yo, I want you to desire
me.
Remembering everything I said.
Yeah.
Yeah, please. If there's anything that I would hope that you would choose to do, it would be to remember that I responded correctly. It's all that matters in the end. Dode wasn't perfect, but he responded correctly. His response was right. It's powerful. To show the right way, he swore an oath to Yahweh, making a binding promise to the mighty one of Jacob. Well, Dode's oath says, I do. I'm answering the invitation. I accept the benefits. That's what he did. Now, the other thing that's really important here is that not only is Yahweh's name used again, but he's the mighty one of Roman Catholicism. Nope.
No.
Of Rabbinic Judaism. Nope.
Nope.
Of the Talmud, of the Christian New Testament, of the Church, of the Quran, for crying out loud.
Absolutely not.
He's the mighty one of Jacob. Now, to say that he's the mighty one of Abraham would be interesting. That would be the mighty one of the covenant. That'd be powerful.
He's narrowing the field here.
he says of Jacob, he's dealing with Israel. That's an integrated Israel, representing the covenant and the people. That's the thing about Jacob. Jacob represents the covenant and the people who are part of it. And with Jacob, you do not have a split between Israel and Yehudah.
He is Israel.
Mm-hmm. Jacob is a united Israel. Folks, when you hear Dode declare that Yahweh is the mighty one, the almighty of Jacob, and not of your church, then if you belong to a church, you don't belong to Yahweh. Pressing on to the third through fifth statement. Even though I enter into the temporary shelter of my family home, although I climb onto my couch in bed, even though I give sleep to my eyes and to my eyelid slumber, meanwhile, without ceasing, I will actually find a sight for Yahweh's tabernacle, for the mighty one of Jacob.
Why lives he?
And he did.
Yeah.
Found it, negotiated a price, bought it, devoted it to that particular cause. But what's really interesting here is the timing of all this. Here, Dodo at home. It was important to Yahweh that his son, his beloved, had a home. Yahweh didn't need a home. Got heaven. Got the universe. But Dode did. And so the priority was to take care of his son before allowing his son to do anything on his behalf. Well, that's pretty special, isn't it?
Well, that's bad for you.
Yeah. Yeah, and so, you know, it does to the time I'm human. I realize I want to crawl into the comfort and the safety of my home. And, you know, I've got a couch, I've got a bed, my eyes, need sleep. But trust me when I say this. I'm going to actually find, for Yahweh, a tabernacle, a dwelling place, a place to settle and abide. For the mighty one of Jacob, and he did just that. In fact, that whole story of his discussions with the Yabusi are fascinating. Behold, we heard of it in Ephrathah. We found it in open environs in Ya'ar. Ephrathah is not just a place that just happened to be randomly chosen. It's Bethlehem.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting. It's also where Rachel died, issuing her warning about Benjamin.
Ooh, yeah, Benjamin.
Yeah, absolutely. And we found it in the open environs of Ya'ar, the forest where the honeycombs are found. And, honeycombs, honey is just a really interesting thing. We have found in ancient jars honey that's 3,000 years old.
Yeah.
Without preservatives and without refrigeration. And you can eat it. It's the only natural substance that is good for us, that doesn't spoil. When Yahweh picks the metaphor, he does it right.
Yeah.
So here's 132.7.
Okay.
Let's choose to go. Well, of our own volition, we should elect to enter, imperfect, cohortative, into his tabernacle, his dwelling place. Let's choose to consistently and independently make an informed verbal announcement regarding life at his footstool. Now, didn't we read that Dode had a home and Yahweh didn't?
Mm-hmm.
Didn't we just read that that Dode was committed to finding a place for Yahweh to have his tabernacle?
Yes, sir.
And yet he's saying, let's go into it. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So what he's talking about here is, let's go into Yahweh's home from a symbolic point of view.
Sure.
Just as we walk into Yahweh's home through Pesach, Matzah, and Bikurim, and symbolically become part of the Beit family covenant relationship. So that's what Dode is talking about here. Let's choose to consistently and independently make an informative verbal announcement regarding life. To go through that door into Yahweh's home, that's the doorway of Pesach, the doorway of life. When we go through that doorway of life, God's saying, make an informative verbal announcement of what you're doing so that others might follow, so that others might know where that doorway is. Because to go into Yahweh's home, you have to enter through the doorway of life, which is Pesach. Let's go into his tabernacle, his home. Let's choose to consistently and independently make an informed verbal announcement regarding life at his footstool. The very place where we find God. You know, it's important to recognize here again that the imperative mode, that it would be wholly and inappropriate for Dode to be ordering God to do anything. And so, once again, we're going to see it used in such a way that expresses volition, second person volition. You know, the greatest thing Yahweh has done for his children was to endure Pesach and Matzah on our behalf so that we could celebrate Bukotim, Shavuah, Teruah, Kippurim, and Sukkah together. And so Dode is making a declarative statement regarding these things. He is saying it by acknowledging that fulfilling these things is what Yahweh actually wants to do. He wants to fulfill his promise. I want you to rise up to actually take a stand and choose to fulfill your vow. Please come onto the scene and accomplish your mission to restore, bringing it to a successful conclusion in harmony with your will. Confirm your stand is valid and correct, rising up to keep your promise to establish and to empower. So here the call stem establishes a genuine relationship between Dode and Yahweh, while affirming that Dode expects this to actually occur. The imperative mood conveys second person volition, which tells us this is Yahweh's will and decision. The paragogic hey serves as an honorific and to sweeten the sound of the request, while the cohortative mood affirms that this is also the desire and choice of the speaker, Dode. Now, I know that we get a little too much into grammar from time to time, but there's a lot to this. That verb, kum, by Yah, stand with Yah. Kum, here was shaped and sweetened in multiple ways. It became endearing. It became an expression of Dode's free will. It is an expression of Yahweh's desire and his will. So it reads, I want you to rise up, actually take a stand, and choose of your own volition to fulfill your vow. Yahweh, on behalf of yourself, establishing a tranquil and serene dwelling place to rest the ark of your power, of your might, and of your protection.
You know, that's almost as profound as when the first time I heard you say that Yahweh has to grow. I mean, it has to be something he wants. You know, this is kind of a parallel type of thing to me. It's like, wow. Yeah, he's putting in context that Yahweh really wants to do this too. He's assuming that he wants to do
it too. And Dode recognizes that Yahweh said. And I think the most profound thing here, though, is that Dode foresaw 1,000 years before it occurred that Yahweh had made a promise and that he wanted to fulfill the promise.
Mm-hmm. And hadn't moved off that time.
That would enable us to all benefit from the Ark of the Covenant.
I believe so, yes.
And yeah, you know what's so amazing about this? That Dode recognizes that Yahweh himself will be the one who comes onto the scene, takes a stand, fulfills his promises, and accomplishes his mission. He's speaking to Yahweh because Yahweh's name is the only one which appears in this text. He doesn't mention Yahusha, nor does Yahweh. And that is because Yahusha is nothing more or less than Yahweh Kum.
Mm-hmm.
This means that 1,000 years before this prophecy was fulfilled, Dode recognized something Christians still haven't figured out 2,000 years after he came onto the scene to take the stand on Pesach and Matzah. Yahweh is our Savior. That is what Yahusha means.
Yes.
Now, may I just go one step further in this discussion between Dode and Yahweh, our Yahusha?
Mm-hmm.
If you understand who Yahusha is, you'll see Yahweh, not Yahusha. Yahusha is Yahweh saving us. Look right through him. Look right past him. Because what you ought to be seeing is Yahweh acting through him. If you see Yahweh acting through him, then Yahusha is an implement of Yah.
Understood.
And that's the way that I think Yahweh wants us to see him. It's what Yahusha kept on saying. Don't be focusing on me. Focus on the Father.
Father, yeah.
You know, focus on the one who sent me. And that's the difference. Yahweh is focusing on Dode because he loves him. He's focusing on Dode because Dode is this marvelous example and songwriter whose lyrics bring us home. That Yahweh is going to celebrate forever. But when Christians and others focus on Yahusha, they're focusing on a toenail clipping relative to the person from which it came. Don't do that. This is directed at Yahweh, and Dode is saying, Yahweh, you want to take a stand. You want to come onto the scene. You want to fulfill your vow on your own behalf. Yeah, that is, as you said, it's as profound as saying Yahweh grows. That God grows. If Yahweh is doing this for his own benefit.
Yes.
Now, we have this tendency, and I think it's one of the problems of religion, is to see this fearsome God and that we need to obey him, and, you know, and oh boy, God, I hope that he chooses to save me because, my.
Exactly.
And it's all, and our focus is all on what we want. Well, why don't people ever take a moment to think, what does God want?
Well,
this is what he wanted to do.
He's got to be getting something out of this relationship.
That's exactly right. And we're going to be a lot closer to him if we focus on what he wants than what we want. If we focus on who he is and what he wants, we're going to be like Dode. We're going to be correct. We're going to be beloved. That's the difference here between Dode and religion.
You think about that just in terms of any relationship. You know, in your marriage relationship, you don't focus on what you want from the marriage. You know, there's some of that, but your focus is more on what your spouse wants, and you want to give them what they want and be there for them.
Mm-hmm.
That's a relationship. That's how our relationship grows.
You know, we've said so many times, a relationship is worthless unless both parties make a contribution, they engage. And that's the reason why the Christian faith is so ridiculous, because a relationship where the God does everything and you do nothing isn't a relationship. But what we tend to forget is that a relationship requires both parties to engage. So it requires God to engage too. For it to be meaningful,
mm-hmm.
God has to engage. You know, one of the greatest joys in life is making a sacrifice for your child. It's something loving parents want to do. They enjoy doing. It's what Doe is recognizing. He always our father. This is what he wants to do. This is what he's chosen to do. That he's going to come onto the scene to take this down. He's going to fulfill his promise on his own behalf, because that's what he wants. He wants to lift his children up. He wants to make a contribution to their lives. Establishing a tranquil and serene dwelling place to rest. The ark of your power and influence. The Aaron, the mercy seat, the ark of the covenant, the chest inside which the Ten Statements,
mm-hmm.
Sometimes I have a brain hemorrhage. The Ten Statements are carried, beside which the Torah is placed. What this says, I think, and I know it's subtle. This is not as profound as any of the other points, but I think it's subtle here. That Yahweh has suggested that the Aaron Ark, he hasn't suggested this part, he has emphatically stated that the Ark is a tangible symbol of his covenant. He has explained how, in conjunction with Pesach, his mercy seat serves to exonerate his children. We know those things for a fact. So in this context now, we see Yahweh serving as the Pesach Lamb. Yahweh serving as the Pesach Lamb, whose sacrifice provides life. We can therefore conclude that the Ark of the Covenant, at least I think this is indicative of that, must be directly beneath where Yahusha was pierced as he was taking the stand to fulfill this promise. It's the reason the earth parted beneath him as he hung from the upright pole that provided a doorway to life on Pesach in 4,000 Yah. His blood dripped on the mercy seat.
Yeah.
Fulfilling Passover.
The priest would never have continued to splatter the blood on the ark on those times had it not been for him to do that. So it has to be below that cave.
Yes.
You know, and if you read about Solomon, he brought Egyptians, architects over to design things when he was building the temple. And they were very good at building tunnels, as they used to through all these different pyramids and so forth, and using sand and so forth to keep it up so they could get through, and all kind of networks and all. And it was interesting, this little slide there where they talk about Solomon hiring them. If he was just building, he didn't need Egyptians. But he built all those tunnels in there, and I'm sure that was where they would hide it from time to time when they were being attacked.
Yeah, well,
why would it not be in those tunnels under that place where he was crucified?
Yeah, in fact, it's interesting that the tunnel that it was most likely taken to and through was Yirmiyah's tunnel through, which was into Yirmiyah's grotto, is really where it is likely to be, because that would be directly under that Golgotha.
The blood would have flowed.
It's really in the highest point of Moriah.
Just don't see Yahweh missing.
Yeah, I am certain that Ron Wyatt, while he may have done a bunch of things wrong, I think that Ron Wyatt's testimony regarding Noah's Ark, because I've Googled it. I've seen it on Google Earth. He was right. I've actually been to his museum where he brought the metallurgy back and some of the petrified wood back. I've examined it. Mm-hmm. I've looked through Google Earth and studied the topography of the Gulf of Aqaba under across from Nuiva Beach where he found the crossing. That's right. I've looked at Google Earth, and you can drill right down and see the burned top of Mount Horeb. You can see where the water poured out of that stone, still stained. You can see where the misguided children built an altar. He found those things. And he's a witness to the fact that the Ark of the Covenant is exactly where it needed to be. And that Joshua's blood had dripped on it as the Pesach lamb. Now, no matter what you might think of the man and whatever, sometimes people who are flawed and misguided can reveal things which help us understand. I think he did in that regard.
And he was an excellent archaeologist.
He was. Well, he was an amateur archaeologist.
He was good at that.
Yeah, he certainly found these things. Yes. Let those who minister, by explaining your intent, choose to be clothed and arrayed in what is right, honest and accurate, correct, proper, and vindicating tzedak. And let those who are devoted to you elect to sing joyfully. 132.9. That's kind of interesting. Yeah? There is a purpose and a function for Cohen.
Mm-hmm.
Counselors devoted to reconciliations and priests who serve during the Mikre provide advice. And the purpose is that throughout time, the vast preponderance of people could read. Somebody needed to explain the purpose of these things. There are aspects of Pesach, Matzah, and Makotim that are nice if someone is presenting them in a way that helps you understand them. And, you know, in the life of Israel, they were celebrated nationally, or supposed to be celebrated nationally. It's good to have a group of people really devoted to conveying this message, particularly if they're clothed and arrayed in what is right, honest, accurate, and correct. And that's what Dode is pleading for here. And let those who communicate and who unite, who counsel on Yah's intent, be clothed in what is right, honest, true. And let those who are devoted to you sing joyfully. Well, do you know any songs that could be sung? In fact, the sum total of all the songs that can be sung, where would you find them?
How about in the Psalms?
Yeah, those and more.
Yeah.
So if you want to be clothed accurately, correctly, and actually ministering to explain to Yahweh's intent, maybe you ought to be singing those Mizmor, the lyrics of his song. And don't be singing them as a curmudgeon. By, you know, I know that some folks are miffed at us for, and me maybe particularly, for constantly suggesting that those Mizmors are really, 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 really important. But that was the only lyric that could be sung at this time. And he's saying, sing them joyfully, not, don't reluctantly say, I'm just going to focus on Yosha. I'm not going to focus on Dode. I think he was a scallywag.
He didn't live up to Paul's standards.
Those songs are beautiful from Yahweh's point of view. You want, Yahweh even talks about him being singer and songwriter. He is saying you recite those songs, and you're going to be clothed in truth. You're going to minister and explain Yahweh's intent when you sing the lyrics of those songs. Clear enough. And Dave, by the way, is not bragging here. He's not self-promoting. He knows what I've just shared, that his songs are the only songs. He knows it. He's not bragging. You know why he's not bragging? He's not responsible for them. He was inspired by Yahweh, and he knows it. So he knows the lyrics of his songs are Yahweh's words that Yahweh will find pleasing, that we appreciate and respect and recite and observe and understand. You know, it's like, Kirk, when you participate in the show, JB, when you wrote your book on circumcision, you know, and I've done these things and written these books, and I'm excited about them, and I'm proud of them, and I'm delighted with the benefit of them, but I'm not bragging about me. It's not my testimony.
Yeah.
But I'm excited, and I'm enthused and joyous. I would say even proud of having this opportunity to convey Yahweh's testimony to help people understand it. You know, I get a letter, it's still once a week, from somebody that says, you know, I've tried to read the Bible from cover to cover. I really wanted to know God. I just couldn't figure it out. I got from one end to the other, and I was more confused than ever. And then somehow, someplace, somewhere, I heard you talking on the radio. And from there, I found yada yada, and I started reading, and for the first time, God's testimony made sense. And you know, now I'm part of the covenant. I celebrate the Moed Mikre, and I've left all association with religion, and it happens regularly. And so that is something to get to help share Yahweh's testimony, you know, as correctly and as accurately and as completely as we're capable of doing, and then sharing the insights that can be derived from it. What a thrill. If you can't be enthusiastic and excited about that, what in the world can you be excited about? And that's what he's saying here. Sing joyfully. You know, this is the imperfect use of the object chooses to continually be influenced by and act upon on behalf of the subject in this way. I don't choose to do this. Be clothed in what is right. Convey Yahweh's intent by singing the lyrics of these songs. Now, there's something here that's just a point that I wanted to reemphasize. And again, this is an insight that I've derived from what I have experienced and what I have seen and what I have read. And there well may be exceptions, but there's a common denominator here that I want to point out. Yahweh chose Dodd. He chose Noach. He chose Abraham. He chose Moshe. He chose Yirmiyah. He chose Yahshua too. Indeed, all the prophets. Yahshua chose his disciples. In fact, I'm unaware of anyone who chose to engage in a relationship with Yahweh that Yahweh did not choose first, introducing himself to them. So, doesn't that reveal something interesting about God and developing a relationship with him? It certainly seems to suggest that there was something about these individuals that Yahweh found interesting, even endearing, or at the very least useful. And with Dodd, it's a lot more than useful. With Abraham, it's a lot more than useful. God loved them. If we then consider what these individuals had in common, I think that the following characteristics stand out. They listened to God. They accepted his offer. And they engaged and acted upon his instructions. They were willing to disengage from whatever they were doing and focus on what God wanted, what he had said and he wanted done. Beyond this, some were brilliant and others not so much. Some had melodious voices while others stuttered. Some were beloved within their community while others were despised. Not one set themselves up as a moral paradigm. And while they were all imperfect when it came to conveying Yahweh's testimony, there isn't a false statement or contradiction among them. Now, with all of them, God didn't force himself on them. He didn't say, you know, you're going to do this and you're going to do that. No. He introduced himself.
He didn't knock them to the ground and blind them?
No, exactly the opposite.
No, he did.
He didn't make them lame.
Yeah.
Gave him the opportunity. Now, this doesn't mean that God was occasionally frustrated, that they were reluctant to engage. And I think, like, for example, with Moshe, when he just said, no, I don't want to do this. I'm not going there. No, I'm not going there. I'm not going to do this. If Moshe had taken a different approach and said, you know, God, you know, they want to kill me there. I murdered a guy. I really didn't murder him. I killed him because he was about to murder an innocent person. I stopped him from murdering an innocent person, something God would respect. And, you know, I'm old. I'm 80 years old. I'm out here tending sheep. I finally got away from all that life. I don't want to go back. But he said instead, you know my past there. Obviously, you're God. You know all of that. Can we negotiate here? Yeah. Can we come up with some terms and conditions to which we can both feel comfortable about this? That's not what he did. And God got frustrated. Clearly got frustrated with him. On behalf of Dode, your associate and co-worker, never remove your presence from your, what's that word? I read my shock.
Yes, it's my shock.
Yeah.
From your anointed. So, folks, that makes Dode Yahweh's Mashiach.
Yeah. Case closed.
That's what it does. It makes him the Yahweh's Mashiach. Now, that doesn't say that it deprives Yosha of that title. But it absolutely, unequivocally bequeaths the title to Dode. On behalf of Dode, your associate and co-worker, never remove your presence from your anointed. The one who was declared to be set apart, prepared and shown to be authorized and approved by you for a particular leadership role and important function through the application of olive oil, symbolizing the set-apart spirit, from the verb mashak, to apply oil. And thereby, Yahweh and Dode rest their case. I'm going to choose to agree with them. Dode is Yahweh's Mashiach. It doesn't even say here, don't remove your presence from me as one of your anointed.
Yes.
On behalf of Dode, for the benefit and account of, for the sake of, for the purpose of achieving the expected result with regard to Dode, your associate and co-worker, never remove your presence from your anointed. You know, by the way, one of the words here, Abed. Abed is often communicated servant and subordinate and that sort of thing. Well, you know, Dode was king. and yet he's presenting himself as associate and co-worker. That's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
But he's clearly Yahweh's anointed. So we're going to pick up at this exact point a week from now. And Kirk, if anybody wants to take umbrage with this, they're welcome to do so. And if they want to say, you know, your translation is rotten and stinks, that's fine too.
Show me where
we're wrong, and you can show that we're wrong.
Correct us.
Correct us.
Very easy.
And we're not going to no sour grapes. I'm going to say, wow, okay, well that makes sense. But all of this has been about Dod and Yahweh's presence on Dod and the fact that Dod was Yahweh's anointed.
Yeah.
So that's pretty hard to argue with.
Yeah, it's a huge reason
and
to
profound.
Dod is.
Yeah. It's so profound. It's yeah, and particularly for our primary purpose. Our primary purpose is to declare what Yahweh actually said as completely and accurately as possible so as to fulfill the promise of Yom Kippurim, so as to help Yehudim, Israelites and Yehudim find their way back to Yahweh. And these realizations about Dod are so essential in that regard.
I think so. I totally agree.
So, Kirk, you're a pretty honest searcher, and you are as well, JB. You guys, if you come up with a different perspective on this, please feel free to share it. As again, I'm like you all. If I'm wrong, I want to know it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but
well,
this is pretty darn clear
to me. I find more reinforcements more than I ever find anything in the opposite direction. And that's what I said to Jeff. I said, you know, this I can't figure it out. I mean, this is what he says. I got
this. Yeah.
Yeah, this is what he
said. Just go where the words lead. You know, it's really hard to be wrong if you accept and embrace what Yahweh says.
Just follow the evidence.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, follow the evidence. Follow the evidence. Go where the evidence lead. Go embrace what you know that Yahweh inspired. If you embrace what you know and Dod's testimony, Shamuel's testimony. I mean, this we've been reading Shamuel, and now we're into the Mizmor Psalms. There is no question that Yahweh authored them. They depict the past and the future correctly. They are as filled with prophecy as anything that exists in Yahweh's testimony. And so we know for certain that Dod was correct when he said that Yahweh's presence was on him, and we know that Yahweh was correct when he said that Dod was right. So, you know, if we're going to take umbrage with this, we're going to argue with this, we got to be really careful, because the furthest we can push it is to challenge the translations of it. That's really as far as you can push it.
Mm-hmm.
I guess you could go one step further. You could, if there's something that is requires an extrapolation, you could challenge our and my interpretation of it too. So feel free to challenge the translations and challenge the conclusions that we've drawn from those translations. But you're not free to challenge the text itself.
Before we close, let me just toss out something. I can't find it right in front of me, but when you were talking about Anna, if you look at the letters, it's all positive. It's perspective. Let's see, perspective of the family that are engaged. Hey, at the end of it. I mean, it's
right.
That's what I mean.
Yeah,
I really,
perspective, the perspective of the child that is born. Yeah.
I'm just, it's just...
Who raises up their arms to observe and grasp hold of Yahweh's hand.
Right. So, I mean, everywhere you look, and when there is a positive or a negative thing, which we'll get into in the next chapter, you'll find that it's really easy to determine what it is. So you can't
if you really wanted to look at it in kind of an interesting way, Kirk, I'm glad you brought this up. It's the perspective or the observant child, sperm, that grows to become a man or woman who reaches up to grasp Yahweh's hand.
So any way you look at it, through all the different meanings of each letter,
there isn't a negative connotation of the letters that comprise the Anna, is there?
All going the right direction, too.
Yes.
A correct direction, the left, right to left.
Yes. Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I love that. It's really interesting here that left and written to right, the perspective of that, which is now perspective, is a word without leaning one right or left. But the sperm is going from right to left towards the letter that is in Yahweh's name.
Yeah.
It's moving in the direction of the person that stands up and reaches up to Yahweh's hand. So the letter that is shaped, that has a direction, is facing in the direction of the letter that's in Yahweh's name. And your research found, Kirk, when that is the case, the interpretation should be positive. When the letter leans away from a letter in Yahweh's name,
then
the interpretation is typically negative.
Typically, yes. So,
it was one of the most fascinating studies.
And
Anah has one directional letter, and that one directional letter moves towards the letter that's in Yahweh's name.
To the Anah.
The Hey.
Look up right to the Hey, yeah. To be where we want to be, reaching up to you.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not negative.
I like that one. That's really good.
Good.
Oh, well, I read through all of this today, thinking, not knowing really how far we would progress through this today, but just really having a marvelous time with it, and it was really fun to see how tonight's program grew out of that testimony. And I'm really glad that we began the program with the discussion on Dod being the anointed of Yah, when the last statement we read is that Dod is the anointed of Yah.
Well, Pam, did you plan that?
I remember when I went through all of this earlier today, I said, boy, wouldn't I just really hope we could end there, wouldn't that be just wonderful? I wonder, if we can get there in an hour and a half. So, it was planned, no. Hoped for, yes. All right, my friends.
All righty. Good luck, both of you.
Yeah, look forward to being with you this time next week.
Yes, thank you. Take care.
Bye-bye.